Okay, we're going to start on the top of Yutet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to now discuss the Mishnah. And the Mishnah said, that one of the items that you can't put adjacent to someone else's property is a laundering pit or hole. That's only when we're talking about the machmatzan, about mina nadyan, dalet amot. So the shlosha tvachim, the three tvachim that are mentioned in our Mishnah, are unique to the machmatzan, but when it comes to the nadyan, you'll need four amot, a full four amot. What's the difference between them? There are two pools, and we discussed this in the Mishnah. There are two pools in which they laundered. There was the first pool, the equivalent of what we would call right, the detergent pool, that they used tzo'at klavim. They used to use the the dung of a dog dung, and they used to place it in there to somehow launder and clean the clothing. And then from there, they used to take it.
Very useful. They used to use that for tanning leather also.
Right. It was a active ingredient in a number of items. So they used it in the first pool. That pool is where they actually laundered the clothing. And then they had a second pool, which was the equivalent of a rinse cycle, where they used to squeeze out the begadim and work them over and clean them. So these two pools, the first pool, the machmitzan, right, from the term to the fermentation, which as Rashi describes here, the process involved leaving it in the water with the tzo'at klavim until they were machmitz, until they fully fermented, umasrichim, and then it's, rotted or smelled. I guess that was an indication that it had fully done its job at that point in time. And then you take that clothing and you rinse it out in the and you rub them, the olden days of cleaning clothing, in this other pool. So when it comes to the machmitzan pool, you only have to be three tefachim away from the wall because the item simply soaks in that pool. Whereas when it comes to the nadyan pool, where you actually are rinsing and working the clothing, there's a lot of splashing that comes because of the activity around the pool. And because of that, you must leave it for a moat away from the wall, so now that water will hit the wall. Tanya nami hachiv a brisa that supports that position. Nivrecha da kubsim dalet amot. When it comes to a nivrecha da kubsim, you have to take it away for amot. Doesn't our Mishnah say gimel tvachim? Right. So how do you reconcile the two? Alav shma minak the Rav Nachman. It must be the reconciliation is the position of Rav Nachman, which is there's a difference between these two pools. Some of the people said it as a question that tanan. So we have our Mishnah that says nivrecha da kubsim gimel tvachim. V'atanya we have a brisa that says arba amot. Amar Rav Nachman. So it's not a memra, an independent memra, but rather an answer to the to reconcile between the two, between the Mishnah and the Braisa. That our Mishnah is talking about the Machmetzan, that's three tefachim away, whereas the Braisa is talking about the Nadyan. He said it explicitly, meaning that Elim Kain Hirchik Misvat Machmetzan Ulokoto Gimot Tefachim. So his Braisa or his Mishnah had it explicit that the Gimel Tefachim here are referencing a Machmitzan, which is this certain type of pool. Right now the Mishnah says Besad Besid. The Mishnah actually says Besad Besid twice. Some controversy about what the actual girsa is in the Mishnah. The first time it's said in the Mishnah, it clearly says Visad Besid. The second time it's mentioned in the Mishnah, it seems from the Gemara, we're going to see in a second, that it should read Osad Besid. Right, that it also, not only, you can either do one of these two items, you can either be Marchikit or Sad Besid. That's what it seems like from the Gemara. We'll talk about Tosfos on the Mishnah, who amended that girsa not to be that way. So you buy the Mara wants to know, Visad Besidnan, O Dilma Osad Besidnan. So the first time it's mentioned in the Mishnah, the Gemara wants to know, when it says, what's the correct way to read the Mishnah? Is the Mishnah giving you options? Meaning that either you're Machiket Rit Tvachim or you're Sad Besid? Or is it that in addition to being Machiket Gimel Tvachim, you also must be Sad Besid? You also must plaster it. So Gemara says, Pshita de Visad Besidnan. It's clear that this is an additional requirement. Beyond simply being marchik three tefachim, you must also place sid over here. De'isachadatcha, de'osad besid tanan. If you really think that the Mishnah reads osad besid tanan imkein learvinhu velitnehu, let us combine the two cases in the Mishnah. I mean that there's the first set of cases in the Mishnah, then the second set of the cases in the Mishnah. Both times the Mishnah's rule is gimel tefachim and visad besid. So if the same din applies, why does the Mishnah divide into categories these different, right, problematic issues that you have putting adjacent, or problematic items that you have putting adjacent to the border? The Mishnah should combine both of them. So Gemara says, Dilma, Mishum, Delo, Domi, Hai Chezeka, the Hai Chezeka. Maybe the whole reason that they didn't put them together is because the hezek is not of equivalent value. Reisha hezeka dimituna, that the first set of items that are mentioned in the Mishnah are issues that deal with moisture, which are, because of their moisture, they are a problem. Seifa hezeka tahavla, and the second half of the Mishnah deals with heat as being the problem. So now between those, based on that, the Gemara seems to indicate that the first case in the Mishnah is visad besid, because the second case in the Mishnah reads, oh, sad besid, and that's why it's so obvious to them that the first one must be visad besid, otherwise you should have combined them. The Gemara says that's not necessarily a proof, because you could say that the difference between the sets in the Mishnah is not necessarily about their din, but rather about their category. And categorically, one is a moisture issues, and the other ones are heat issues. Now, Tosfos on the Mishnah, if you look at the Mishnah on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, you can see that the word O is in parentheses, meaning that the Girsa, right, was changed, meaning that the Mesos HaShas is over there, and it's based on Tosfos, that they take out the O inside the Sid. But they're faced with the problem, which is that the Gemara seems to indicate, right, otherwise. So Tosfos over on the Mishnah says, beside the Sid, he says, B'nir of Dilri, B'seifa Nami Goris beside the Sid. So the Sefer of the Mishnah, it's the last Tosfos on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, right? So he says that it should say Vesad Besid at the end. So now the Tosfos has the obvious problem. From the Gemara, it seems that the Sefer is O. So he says, if you look down towards the last line of this Tosfos, Vahad Pshita Le the Gemara, the Besefer Havi O Sad Besid. Just if it's written Vesad Besid in the Mishnah, why is it so obvious to the Gemara that the second case is O Sad Besid? So Tosfos says basically that the conclusion of the Gemara that there are different categories of damage being done in the Mishnah is also his explanation of why the Gemara thinks it's so obvious that the second part of the Mishnah is Osad Besid versus the first half of the Mishnah is Visad Besid. And that's because of the first issues are issues of moisture, which are much more pernicious, and therefore they would require not only three tefachim, but also besad besid, as opposed to the second, which are just havla issues, and those havla issues can be contained either through gimel tefachim or sad besid. So again, just Tosfos reads not what it seems to be from the Pashtus Gemara, but he says that the Gemara interpreted Visad Basid in the two instances of the Mishnah differently based on the difference of categories that are found in the Mishnah. All right. Now the Mishnah reads, the Gemara continues, I'm sorry, Tashma, or Tashma, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Sela Hababi Adaim. Right, so this is something that we had before, which is is the earth that is crumbly, right? That does not have integrity to it. So when you dig into it, everything falls apart. So zecho for boromikan, zecho for boromikan, that each one of them can dig a bore in their property. Zemarchi gimel tfachim v'sad besid. Zemarchi gimel tfachim v'sad besid. So in each of these instances, what does it say? It says that they most both distance themselves from the walls three tfachim plus sad besid. It must plaster it. So just like before, we brought this as a raya that against the position possibly of a baye, which is that you can't be, that one party could be somech. Over here, it seems that both parties must separate from the wall. What was the answer back then? The answer back then was no. The chiddush is that even by crumbly earth, you only have to distance yourself three tefachim. You don't have to go more. So the Gemara is asking a similar question now. What do you have? Gimel tefachim and both have to be sad besid. So now the Gemara's answer is going to be the same that it had before, which is, right, time of the Babi Yadayim. Right, the whole reason here is because you did it because the earth is crumbling. How low Babi Yadayim? If it was not crumbly earth, low. That you would not have to also put in Sid. You don't have to put in one of the two. Where it says low. How Adin the Afal Gab the low Babi Yadayim Nami Sad the Sid. That even if it was not crumbly earth, you would have to plaster it. Ubabi Yadayim it's Rikhle. So then, what's the chiddush of the Mishnah Braisa that's talking about Babi Yadayim? That's the chiddush is the Sakhat Atamina, given the Babi Yadayim by Rav Chatvei. I would have thought, just like we said the same answer before in the Gemara, that I would have thought when he had crumbly earth, he would need even more. That it wouldn't be sufficient. Three tefachim or sad besid would not be sufficient. Kamash Malon, that it, the same standard applies to this crumbly earth as does to the other items mentioned in the Mishnah, which is that it's sufficient. Three tefachim and sad besid will be sufficient in order to allow you to dig a bore in your property and you wouldn't be classified as a mazik. Right now.
So we
don't have a proof from this. We don't have a proof from this or a question from this. But nevertheless, the Gemara concludes that it was before the Gemara had, was seeming to conclude that the first part of the Mishnah is Vih, and the second Mishnah part is Oh. The Gemara gave a week.
But then the Gemara was Dochek.
Right. The Gemara gave a week Dochek that there are two different categories. That was a week Dochek, but yes. So there is, the Gemara is technically inconclusive.
That
They did accept it, otherwise they wouldn't have got a tashma.
Right. Right, so the Gemara is not conclusive. I mean, the Gemara is docha both answers in the end. Although it seemed to me that it's stronger that the V and the O would be a stronger sense from the Gemara, and that's why maybe even the Girsa fell into the Mishnah that way. Right, so all these items you have to move away from the wall. These are all problems of heat. It's not hatam. So where else do we use these types of items? That is in the Gemara in Shabbos by metomnim ubamay entomnim. When it comes to atmano on Shabbos, atmano is the ability to leave an item to stay hot or warm, insulate it, or to heat it on the Shabbos. That you put it inside of these certain types of insulators, and those insulators either the Mishnah and Shabbos has different categories of insulators. Some that actually heat the item, and the right very good mosif hevel, and the others that are simply shomer. Right onto the shomer or keep the heat that is already in the object. So here the Mishnah says, "Bametomnim uvemeintomnim." Intomnim. Here's the category of items that you may not use for hatamana. Lo begefet. Right, not with the solit of the leftovers, the dregs of the olive press. Velo bezevel. Okay, not with dung. Velo bemelach. Not with salt. Velo besid. Not lime. Velo bechol. Not sand. Ben lachim, ben yveshim, whether they are moist or dry. So Mara wants to know, wait a minute, if we look at the list in Shabbos and we look at the list in our Mishnah, right, the two lists are exact except for two items. In our Mishnah, they add the additional item of slaim, and the Mishnah in Shabbos adds in the chol. So why, the Gemara wants to know, is there a difference? I mean, if they're functioning, if the whole issue is hevel, right, which is the issue both for the distancing of it from the wall, as well as the hatumana, why it's problematic on Shabbos, because it's mostly hevel, then they should have the same list. So why are the lists different? So where it says, Mishnah hacha duktani slaim velok tani chol. Why in our Mishnah does it enumerate in the list slaim, these fire rocks or flame-throwing rocks, and not sand? Mishnah hotam, why by the Mishnah Shabbos duktani chol does it mention sand, velok tani slaim, it doesn't mention these rocks? So Amar Rabbi Yosef, Lefi Shein Tarkam Shunei Adam Lahatmin Bislaim. The answer is, right, it's just a practical reason. People don't generally put their food into rocks. It's a little difficult to do atmana with rocks, and therefore they don't put their food. So that was why it's left out of there. That doesn't necessarily answer about the sand, but you might say that the same thing, that people don't pile up sand next to the edge of their property, meaning that it's not necessarily a functional thing where they're going to pile up sand on the edge of the property. But Abaye doesn't necessarily address that. Amar le Abaye. Abaye says to him, "V'hir dalkam shvonei adam latmin begizei tzemer ulshonot shel argaman." Is it normal for people to place their food into wool, wool, bunches of wool and strips of purple wool? I mean, since when? Those are items that we're going to see in a second are mentioned in Mishnah with regards to Hatmana. And nevertheless, they're mentioned in the Mishnah. But we're not talking about things that necessarily people would use every day. This is expensive. You know, wool was expensive, especially the Shonot Shel Argaman, strips of purple wool that were combed and laid out nicely and were used for clothing, expensive clothing. Why would you put pots into that item? The Tanya, we have a price of Tomnim, Megizne Semer, Ubitzipe Semer, Ubit Shonot Shel Argaman, Ubimuchin. That one may do Hatmana with Gizei Tzemer, which would be what we just mentioned before, these bunches of wool, after they have been already combed. It's wool that's already been combed out. Now, with Tzipei Tzemer are Sarak and Nafatz. Right? They were not only were they combed, but they were also separated and cleaned. Right? Ubleshnochel Argaman, they're dyed right, purple as well, and they are made into strips. And the muchin are the leftovers, right? The wool that comes off, the light wool that comes apart that you can use as a almost like a cotton-like substance, which would be both soft and absorbent. So v'ein metaltelin otam, but they are muksa. They're muksa because why would they be muksa on Shabbos? They're muksa on Shabbos because you don't usually use them for hatmana. That's not their normal purpose. Their normal purpose is to make begadim. If that's their normal purpose, and yet, what does the Braita say? You can use them for hatmana. So it's clear that the Mishnah or the Braitot are not enumerating simply items that are used for hatmana, but items that possibly would be used, even in unusual circumstances. So why can't you mention slayim also? So Elamar Baye Yagid Alav Reol. So Abaye gives a solution which says that one Mishnah is Mara on the other Mishnah. That means that each list is not comprehensive. Together, putting the two lists together, you'll get a comprehensive list. Right? Over here, it refers to rocks, but the same would be true by sand. And then over there by Shabbos, the same in the reverse, which is, it mentions chol, but the true would be slaim. So Amalei Rava, whoa. You got a Leiro. I mean, if you want to use Yagida Levreo, which is that one Mishnah will be Mar'et on the other Mishnah, then you do it in a summary form. I mean, that what's the whole point of making an extensive list in both places and then changing one item? The whole reason to use a reference to another item in summary is to say, I have a comprehensive list, and then the next time I do it, I mention one or two of that list in order to indicate you to go look at the other list, and that'll be the summary. But why would you go comprehensive in both places and just change one of them? That doesn't make sense that would be the a way to have Yagida Levreo. Let him enumerate all the items in one of the Mishnayot. And let him mention the other one of them in the other Mishnah. And I don't. The machlokas here, whether there's a girsahu here, whether you include this, or where it should be eliminated, doesn't seem necessary. But the basic idea would be that you have a comprehensive list either in Shabbos or here, and then the other place would just mention one or two, just a small number of them, and you would know to go look at the reference. It would be a reference to the other list, and go look at the other list. So that can't be it. El Amarava. So here's our third solution to the difference between, we had Rav Yosef's solution, Abaye's solution, now Rava's solution too. Why is it Chol and Slaim? He says, Hotam, I know time into Lok Tani Slaim. The reason that Slaim are not mentioned in the Mishnah and Shabbos is Mishom de Mishtachala the Kdera. Because they do something to the Kdera. What is it that they do? Rashi claims that Mishtachala Kdera, he brings one interpretation which is Shemishtabrim et Kdera. They break the Kderot. I mean, I don't know if it's because of the hardness or the heat or the flames that come out of them, but somehow they damage the Kderot. That's the first interpretation that Rashi brings. But he says, Kach Shamati, he says, that's what I heard, but he says, I don't like it, because the word Mishtache throughout Shas is not used in that context. The Mishtache, the word throughout Shas, is used to mean, right, Chaluda, to rust. And he says that it causes something to rust. So Rashi, in his own, believes, even though he heard this interpretation means to break the Kdera, thinks Mishtachal Kdera is that it causes the pot to be rusted, to rust or to ruin faster. So people do not use Slaim because it deteriorates the pot. It'll cause it to rust. Tosus, on the other hand, quotes right the Rashi, and then he brings down the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is, and the Rabbeinu Tam. So he says, he brings the original interpretation about it breaking the pots, and he mentions, it's very interesting, he said, that he thinks that these rocks aren't normal, therefore we are matmin in them. He says, since these are unusual, based on this idea that Mishtachalei Kdera was people did not use them normally, he says, when something's not normal, we have a principle by Gzerot. The principle by Gzerot is that Gzerah is never placed on something like Loshchicha. The Rabbanan generally only goes there on items that are frequent or common. Since it's not frequent or common, there's no Gzerah. And listen to what they did. He says, V'cheina minag shalanu. Our minag is, shanu no'agim latzmin b'slayim sha'ish yotzei mehen. Shekorin kailush. We put our stuff into rocks. These flame-throwing, heating rocks, right, that are called kailush, because they're not subject to the gzera of hatmana. It's amazing, which is that they're using rocks that are mosiv hevel, and they're doing hatmana with it because that wasn't tachat the gzera of the chachamim because it's such an unusual item. It's very interesting. But he says, in the end, Rashi's question is a very strong question. So he brings two interpretations. One is the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam says the mishtache is that the heat of the rocks ruins the food. Right, that's what the Rabbeinu Tam explains. Mishtachei Kdera is not the pot itself, but the contents of the pot. Vilari Nira, and the Reed says it's Kaperish Rabbeinu Chananel, that the reason that you have to move them away is because they ruin the ground underneath them. The rocks, it's not a problem, it is chaluda. We're going to see a second in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to use the term, right, chaluda, not to mean to rust, but also to mean to weaken the ground underneath, or to soften the ground underneath. So the problem with using, or why people don't use these rocks, is not because of the damage to the kdera, but mishtacha b'kdera is that they cause damage, the heat of the rocks cause damage to the ground underneath. It makes it chalud, makes it soft, right, and to lose its strength or integrity of the ground underneath, and that's the problem, right? So we just gave a number of interpretations: either it breaks the gdera, or it causes the gdera to rust. The other possibilities we saw were that it was a problem for the food inside, that it causes the food inside to be ruined because of too much heat, or the problem is that the land, the earth underneath it is ruined by the fact that you place these rocks. And for all these reasons, people would not normally use these rocks on Shabbos.
Right.
I mean, what does it mean, psikration? The reason, this is a mitzius issue. I mean, it's not a Shabbos, it's not a din Shabbos issue. It's an issue that people didn't normally use these because they were, right, they were not...
The effect it would have.
Right, the effect it would have on them. So therefore, the mission doesn't mention it because it was just not an item that people would normally use. In terms of the din of Shabbos, you're talking about the Tosfos, who says that we do use such rocks. The problem is an issue of Hatmana. The issue of Hatmana is simply Gzeret Chachamim, Shema Yatmin Beremetz, which is that we do not worry about something that is Mosif Hebel in of itself is not a problem on Shabbos, to put something into Mosif Hebel. The problem is that we are afraid that if you do that, you will at some point put it into Remetz, which are ashes, live ashes, and you'll stoke the fire. So that's a Gzeret Chachamim. So when the Gzeret Chachamim doesn't apply, then it's not a problem. Secretion wouldn't even enter the picture over here. All right. So now the Gemara says, Hocha, so what about in our Mishnah? Hainu taima delok tani chol, why does it not mention sand in our Mishnah? Demishum demechamame chayim demikari karir. That sand is simply an insulator. Sand reflects whatever's in it. If you put something hot into the sand, it will retain the heat. If you put something cold into the sand, right, it will retain the coolness. So therefore, the issue of sand, right, is not the issue. Sand is not an issue. Putting it up against the wall is not an issue because the sand itself is not problematic. It's the fact that you put something hot into the sand that makes it an insulator, and that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about objects that are placed by a wall, that their heat will compromise the integrity of the wall, and that's just not true by sand. Tani Rabosha Cho, right? So wait a minute. Rabosha, in his Brisa, right, or in his Tosefta, he places the word Chol in it by our Mishnah. Now, if you just said Chol is not a problem of heat, then why would he have it in his list? Hatam Mimetuna, right? That he says he puts it in the moisture category, not in the in the heat category, but rather in the moisture category. It says, Tana Nami Didan Litne, look maybe tuna. So then, okay, our Tana also, why doesn't he just put it? Fine. So he didn't put Chol in the heat category, let him put it in the moisture category.
It's something about there, wet sand.
Right. It would have to be, obviously, wet sand, otherwise there would be
dry
no...
Dry sand would still not be...
Problematic, very correct. That's right. Otherwise, right, I don't, dry sand doesn't have any relevance to the right, to the problems that we're mentioning here. So, Hatani Le Amata Mayim. So he says, no, he says, that you already mentioned amatamayim. You already mentioned an irrigation trough or an irrigation channel, which deals with wet items or moisture. So we don't have to mention this. Gemara says, wait a minute. Milok tani amatamayim v'ktani nivrechata kovzim. So meaning that if you want to say that amatamayim, an irrigation channel, will be comprehensive in terms of anything with moisture, then why do you mention laundering pools as well as, right, the irrigation channel? Either one is enough, or if you're going to start making the list extensive, then put everything in. So Mar says, Hanu Tzrife. No, there we need both of them. Why? Have you just simply put an irrigation channel with Shum to Kaviyah? I would have thought the problem by irrigation channel is that it's a permanent fixture. People don't take away irrigation channels in general because they need the water for the field or for the chatzir that it's coming into. And therefore, that's why it's problematic. Aval, Nivrechata Kuvsim, when it comes to a laundering pool, Dlo Kaviyah, I mean that sometimes people change jobs, they change professions. So that doesn't mean that they're going to permanently have a laundering pit in their backyard. Right? Amalo, maybe there wouldn't be a problem because it's only temporary. Or somewhat temporary. If you said that the problem in the Mishnah was only mentioned was the laundering pools, is because they sit, meaning that the water sits, and therefore it can cause more damage by the fact that it's still water. But when it comes to an irrigation channel, the water is moving, meaning it doesn't have time to penetrate necessarily and undermine the wall because it's always moving. It's rushing down the irrigation channel, and therefore maybe that over there we wouldn't need to distance it from the wall. The Gemara says tricha that we need both of them. So the mention of amatamayim and mivrechet akovsim is necessary because we couldn't learn one from the other. But once we have both of those, then moisture we know already is problematic, and therefore wet sand does not have to be mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah because we know moisture is an issue. Right now, Mar says, Marchikim, this is the next category in the Mishnah, which is Marchikim et Ezraim et Machrisha. One must distance his plantings as well as his Machrisha, his plow, from the wall. So Mar says, wait a minute. The two are, right, basically synonymous, because if you want to plant seeds, you've got to plow that area. And if you plow that area, right, you're planning on putting seeds in there. So why are they two different categories? So Zraim typically mishum machresha. So why don't, for Zraim, just say machresha? The reason you can't plant over there is because you've got to plow there. So why do you have to mention a separate category of Zraim? The answer is mapolat yad. They did hand seeding. They didn't plow it, but they did a hand seeding job over there, and therefore it wasn't a problem machresha. It was a simple problem of seeding. Where it says machresha, but typically mishum zraim. What about the other way around? Instead of plowing, just say that planting is the issue, because whether you plant bimpolat yad or derecha machresha, the problem is that you're going to grow zraim there. Where it says bechorish lilanot. No, the difference is that you don't necessarily have to plow to plant. We also know that's what's called. Yesterday we spoke about this avodat hakerem. Avodat hakerem, which also applies to lilanot, is that they used to plow the areas around the vineyards or around the trees in order to soften the earth and to help the roots and for the moisture to go down into the roots. And therefore, there was plowing that was not necessarily for planting. It was simply for the benefit of the tree that's there. So Mar says, well, for both of these, typically, shemishomaya. Why don't we just talk about water over here? Right. So if you're talking about water, water is a problem. Why is there a water problem? Because you have to water these items all the time, meaning Zraim need to be watered constantly. That's one of the definitions the Gemara says by Yerek, for instance, by vegetables, that they need water all the time. Same thing by Zraim, they need constant watering. They need constant watering. We just know from the previous part of the Mishnah that moisture is a problem for the walls. So why mention Zraim? Just say, okay, if you're going to have to water the Zraim over there, then it will be a problem just because of moisture. Where it says, beautiful line here, Tana be'eretz Yisrael kai. Our Tana was from Eretz Yisrael. Tichtiv l'mtara shamayim tishtemayim. You don't have to water it. The rain comes. The rain comes. The rain doesn't make a difference whether your plants are there or whether the wall, you know, if there are no plants, the same rain is going to come next to that wall. So since you're not going to actively be watering the field, and we're going to be relying on a Kadosh Baruch Hu to bring rain in order to feed the fields, right, in our idyllic circumstance where we don't need to irrigate, and Hashem brings the rain at Beito, right, as it says in Vayayim Shema. Therefore, the Mitar Shemaim Tishtemayim, we don't need to worry about him and moisture. So therefore, there'll be three different categories. There'll be Machresha, plowing, which isn't necessarily for planting. There'll be a category of planting, which isn't necessarily a moisture problem because you're using rain water. And right, and then there's a moisture issue, which is simply that water is problematic where you're actively bringing in moist items to that area.
I mean, if it rains, so the fact that it needs water, I mean, but there's water naturally.
Right, I'm saying that's the answer is that the Zraim, right, when it rains, right, the Zraim are not necessarily a problem of watering them, because the Zraim, the rain that falls on the Zraim would have fallen on the open ground also. So there would be no problem. That's why you need both of them to be mentioned, right? So now the Gemara says, the Memra. The conclusion from this is that the Zraim, litzdadim, kamishtarshe. The problem of planting adjacent to someone's wall is that we think that these Zraim are going to undermine the integrity of the wall. How do they undermine, how do plants undermine the integrity of walls? Their roots. Right, their roots come and they dig underneath and they shake the foundation, like we said with trees before, right? The trees' roots extend and that would cause a problem. So the underlying assumption must be here that the Zraim that we're planting here their roots would also crawl under the wall and cause a problem. Mar says, Baha, Tznan, we have a Mishnah in the Kilayim that says, Hamavrich et hagefen. Hamavrich et hagefen is someone who takes a branch from a vineyard. He takes it from a vine, one shoot of a vine. He reburies it into the ground and pulls it out in a new location. So he's basically forcing this shoot to root in between by pushing it through the ground and pulling it up in a new location. That's called mavrich from the word berech, from the word knee, because it's being bent into the ground and coming up on the other side. Same thing as vayavrich. The Rashi says vayavrich et hagmalim. How do camels go to rest? Camels rest by going down onto their knees, right? They collapse their feet and go on their knees. So that's also vayavrich et hagmalim. Same idea. So over here, mavrich et hagefen ba'aretz. Im in al gaba far shloshat tefachim, in the area where he's buried it, and then he's taken it on the other way, the area that's buried underneath, if there's not three tefachim worth of dirt above it, lo yavi zer aleh, then you may not plant other items on top of it. But
the assumption is that it's coming out, he's pulling it up some distance away.
Right, right.
And so in the intervening space.
Exactly. In the place where he's expecting it to root underneath the ground, in that area, if there's at least 3 tefachim of dirt above it, right, then you could plant there. If there's not 3 tefachim, you may not do it. B'tani Allah. And we said over there, when there is no 3 tefachim, avozariat tzladim ilach velech. When there isn't a sufficient amount of dirt for him to plant directly above the vine, he may plant on the sides. Now, if he may plant on the sides, the indication from this Mishnah is that the rooting is simply straight down, because otherwise if it moved to the side, why would it help you that you're planting on the sides? Because the roots would still reach, right, to this shoot that you put under the ground, because it's less than 3 tefachim into the ground. So, why would we say here, the conclusion of our Gemara is that the Zraim are problematic because they root under the wall, and over here the Mishnah says that they only root straight down because they don't affect the vine that it, or shoot that's in the ground right next to them. So, Amar Rabbi Chago b'shem Rabbi Yosi mipnei shemachlidin et akarka umalin afar tichoach. The problem is not roots. The problem is what they do to the ground around them. And at the roots, you're right. En ochanami, the roots go straight down. The problem with Zraim and the problem with planting is that they soften the earth. And this is the word machlid that we saw before. Right? That's why Rabbeinu Tam used the word chaluda, not to mean rusting here, but to be softening of the ground, right? Or to right, moving the dirt underneath and making it so that it's not firm karka. So that's what these Zraim do. The problem they face for the wall is not that they root under the wall, but simply that they now, the foundation on which the wall is standing, which is the hard ground or the firm ground, is now ruined by the Zraim because they soften the ground and it's going to change the underlying right foundation of the wall. Okay, next, Gemara. Now we said by a meiraglayim in a kotel that one may not urinate next to a wall. It has to be at least 3 tefachim away from the wall. Amar Rav Chana, mutar la'adam lashkin ma'im b'tzad kotlo shel chaveiro. Person is permitted to urinate next to the property or really the wall of his friend. Dichtiv, I can prove that. I can bring you a pasuk that says that because it says by Achav, v'chrati la'achav mashtin bakir. But Tzur Bazu b'Yisrael, so the Navi telling Achav basically that he will be wiped out entirely. I mean that Achav is going to be eliminated. The Navi tells what's going to happen. His wife will be Achav li'ofa shamayim or flaklavim. Right? That his family and his wife are going to meet a very terrible death because of the things that he's done and he and his wife have done throughout the time that they ruled. So that Navi says, "V'chadil Achav mashtin bakir." Now, mashtin bakir indicates that what? That would be a normal thing that people would do, would be mashtin bakir, that they would urinate against a wall.
In
Erechav's family, right. I don't think the Gemara is going to reject this, but this proof doesn't seem so strong. Just because, right, they did it doesn't mean that it is correct necessarily. Achav was not of the greatest integrity, and so I don't know why this
is. Yeah, you can even think that the Navi is simply choosing a descriptive term of people who just don't really care about others, that they're not careful about the people's property, everything belongs to them.
Right, very possible. So the proof isn't good, and the Gemara is going to reject it in the anyway. But we have to explain what the Gemara is thinking at this point. When we have our mission says, our mission says you have to distance 3 tefachim. So how could Rav Bar Chana say that you're allowed to go adjacent to the wall, urinate right up against the wall? Gemara says, no. Hotam bishofchim. That depends what. You can urinate next to a wall because that simply is a small amount, plus it's temporary, and it will go away. What you may not do is take the urinal and, right, dump it out by the wall, because that's, first of all, a lot more, right, there's a lot more water, plus it may be even that it's, it'll actually, you know, be a permanent location where he'll always dump his shofchim, and therefore we don't allow you to do that. Whereas it's now the Gemara continues, Tashma. Lo yishtin adam ma'im b'tzad kotlo shel chaveiro. Now we have an explicit brisa that says a person should not urinate next to his friend's wall. Elim kein hirchik menu gimel tefachim. Unless he does a distant 3 tefachim like our Mishnah. B'med v'rem amurim b'kotu levenim. That's talking about a brick wall, because a brick wall, which is made out of baked, you know, a fire, with the urine or the contents of the urine will cause it to be damaged or compromise the integrity of it. When you're talking about rocks or stones, as long as you don't damage the wall, that's fine. But how much is that? That's a distance thing of a tefach. If the wall is made out of bedrock, then mutar, you can urinate over there because urine will not affect the bedrock. So again, what do you see here? You see from this brisa that bedrock, it can be right up against the wall. Stones, you have to be a tefach away. Bricks, you have to be three tefachim away. So how's Rabbi Bar Chana going to explain this mishnah, this brisa, when he says you can urinate right up against your friend's wall? So Gemara says, tiyufta de Rabbi Bar Huna, tiyufta. Right, that it's a really strong question against Rabbi Bar Huna. You cannot bring the answer that we said before of shofchim, right? Because when Rabbi Bar Chana, or that Rabbi Bar Chana was talking about tsunama, that he was talking about bedrock, because that's an unusual circumstance. If Rabbi Bar Chana says you can urinate next to your friend's wall only if it's bedrock, then he should have mentioned that. I mean, that should have been something that he said. Right? Our Braisa here explicitly mentions that it's yashtin and not shofchim, it seems. And the tsunama case where you think Rabbi Bar Chana could explain himself, that the Gemara says, or Tosus suggests over here, that tsunama is such an unusual circumstance that he would have to mention that. To say that he makes a blanket statement and that it only refers to bedrock, says that he would have to qualify his statement with. So now we have a question of Rav Huna, but the Gemara says, Baha Rabba Barhun, Rav Chana, Kara Krokamar. He brought a pasuk, right? So the Gemara says, Hatam Hachikamar. This is the explanation of the pasuk. Afilu Mide de Darke Le Shtune Bikir. Even items, or it's weird, it's really not items, but it's living beings that normally urinate on a wall, lo shabik nale, you will have not left, you will have none of that left. Ma nihu, who is the one that normally urinates on a wall? Kalbo, it's a dog. Right, so that's the Navi is saying that it's not your whole family, I mean your whole family and all your animals and your dogs, everything is going to go here. Everything will be killed out. I mean, not simply, this is going to be a wholesale, right, removal of the family of Achav and Izevel from the world, and all the way down to the Kelev, which is Mashtina Lakir. So Mashtina Lakir here does not necessarily indicate that human beings are permitted to urinate on walls, but rather it's talking about how far extensive this elimination of his family will be, even until the dogs of his family. So Amar Rab Tuvi Bar Kisna Amar Shmuel Rakik Einu Mema'et B'Chalon. So I'll just say now, we're going to start a sugya, we won't finish it now, but it has nothing to do with our mission right now. It's obvious that the Gemara is going to come back and use our Mishnah for something, but it's going to take a long time for our Gemara to get back to our Mishnah. So right now we're going to enter the world of Tumah and Tumat Olalot. Just so you know, don't get scared, we'll come back, but it's a short time. But here, now we start. Amar Rav Tuvi Bar Kisna Amar Shmuel Rakik Einu Mema'et B'Chalon. So basic setup here, the structure of what we have here is that you have a window that is between two houses. You have two houses that are adjacent to each other, a du-mishpachti house. But not only is it a du-mishpachti house, they happen to have a window between the two homes on the wall. There's this joint wall between them. That window is at least a tefach by a tefach. Tefach by a tefach is the qualification, what's called a petach or an ohel, allows tumah to move. So if a window is a tefach by a tefach and there's a mace in one of the houses, the tumah will flow through to the other house and they will both have tumat ohel. Now what happens if the window is exactly a tefach by a tefach, but there is a wafer that is sitting in the window, and the wafer sitting in the window is mima'et, reduces right, the window to less than a tefach. Does that now prevent the tumah from going through? Shmuel's statement is that the rakik, the food item here, does not reduce, even though it reduces the size of the window, right? Nevertheless, it's not, does not reduce, right, or does not help it for tumah, right? Why? Why doesn't it help it for tumah? Because we think in the end, what's he going to do with this wafer? He's going to eat it, right? He's going to eat it. In the end, he's going to take it away. Then it doesn't become a part of the binyan. It doesn't become part of the window. So where it says, why a wafer? Look at thicker items also. Where it says, even thicker food items, which are, came into ichzele, lo mevatele, since they're visible, a person would of course take them away. He's going to use them in the future. Of a rakik, the mam'is, right? A rakik which is very thin, and we would think that it'll get ruined by the moisture of the window, meaning they're coming up from the rocks of the window. Let's assume now what? It is ruined. Kamash Malon, that even there. So every game in ichse means that both you can see it and it is usable still. The food is still usable. When it comes to thicker foods, the moisture in the window won't affect the food. You'll see it's visible and therefore you'll take it and eat it. So therefore you're not mevatel it by a rakik, which is very thin, and the moisture getting to it will ruin it and make it soggy and unedible. So therefore you would just assume that he would leave it there and it would become a part of the binyan. Kamash Malan, that it doesn't work that way. So now the Gemara says, wait a minute, why is the problem over here that the rakik is going to be ichzele? I mean, the whole problem with the rakik is that you're going to eat it and take it away and you're not mevatel it. I mean, there should be other problems with using food as a stopper for tumah. What is that? But typically, tahavale dabar shuhu mikabel tumah. It's something that receives tumah.
The whole problem is that it's being abandoned there. The, right,
Well, that's not a problem.
It only can possibly serve as a stopper if we're assuming that it's going to be abandoned there.
Correct.
It's going to be abandoned there, and it gets ruined, then it's not going to be considered fruit anymore.
Okay, very good. So that's going to be the Gemara's answer. The Gemara's answer is exactly what you said. You're jumping ahead in the Gemara, but the Gemara's going to ask the question and answer exactly what Shaul just answered. Because the Gemara says, well, b'chol davar shemekabel tumah, eino chutzeitz b'fnei atumah. Right? So anything that is, what? That is a mekabel tumah cannot function as a stopper for the movement of tumah. So if you have food, which is mekabel tumah, then how could it be that the tumah, right, it prevents tumah from passing from through each house because it is itself is mekabel tumah, right? It's right, exactly, transparent in that sense. So Mar says shenilosh memei peirot that he used, it was baked with or put together with fruit juices. Now fruit juices themselves don't necessarily help you because those items What the Gemara is after now is something called Hechsher the Kabel Tumah, which is something that is Machshir, that in order for an item to be Mekabel Tumah, including food items, they have to come into contact with moisture or wetness. Now, those wetnesses, what we have the Aryad Shachat Dam, which are the seven liquids which are provide Hechsher the Kabel Tumah. Of those seven liquids, the ones that are relevant to us now are going to be Mayim, right, or water, wine, Yayin, and Shemen. So even Mei Peirot, even Yayin and Shemen are still good to be Machshir LeKabel Tumah. So the answer must be that these are Mei Peirot that are not wine or, right, or oil. It has to be that the Gemara is talking about Mei Peirot, like apple juice or something that is not, right, not qualified as one of the Machshir LeKabel Tumah. Exactly. So now we have a case where the food is not Machshir LeKabel Tumah. Gemara says, Mei Tevei. Kupa mleya teven, v'chavit mleya grugrot. You have a basket that is full of straw, and you have a chavit, a barrel full of dried figs, hamruchim b'chalon, that are sitting in this window. Roim kol shili natlu v'yicholim ateven v'grugrot amod b'fnei atzmam chotzitzim. Now, if you would remove the basket, or you'd remove the kli, and those items would be able to stand without whatever's holding them, then we see if that's enough to be break up the tefach by tefach window, then chotzitzim, they block it. Bimlav, enon chotzitzim. If not, they are not chotzitz. So here over here you have food items. They're acting as a chatzitza, or they're acting as a block for tumah moving back and forth between the two houses. Right? And nevertheless, what does the Mishnah say? What do we say here? That it is good chatzitza. It's a good chatzitza. Where it says, Vaha, teven chazel bemto. Right? Teven, straw, is used to feed animals. If it's animal feed, then what? It should be able, it's mekabel tumah. If it's mekabel tumah, then why should it work as a good chatzitza? Where it says, visaria, that it's rotten. That's what Shoal, what you had suggested before, that if it's unedible, then it becomes into a state where it's no longer food. If it's no longer food, then it's not mekabel tumah. So Gemara says, wait a minute, unedible tevin is still chazadatina. You can still use it for making cement. Right? They used to use tevin for cement. You can use it for cement, so it's still ra'ui. If it's ra'ui, then it's still mekabel tumah.
Meaning what? It has a status of
I'm sorry?
It has a status of
No, no, it'll be a status of usable. It's still usable. I mean, that it hasn't lost. Problem is that once the food, it was once a food item, and therefore it was a muksha the kabel tumah, and it could have been mekabel tumah, then it does not lose its status as a functioning food or a usable item, even until it becomes useless. The same way that a maaseh, you have to do some sort of action to mevatel a kli from being mekabel tumah. So it's over here, but the food, if it's still functional, you won't be able to remove the tumah from it unless you actively, right, remove, you know, say that it's going to be mevutel there. So Mar says, the ipei kotze, that has thorns in it. So if it's thorns in it, nobody's going to put that in their cement, because how do they make their cement? They have to stomp on it with their feet. And if it has thorns in it, nobody's going to stomp on their feet. Mar says, chazil asoka. What are you talking about? Okay, so now we have this tevin that has thorns in it, that is rotten. You know what I'll do? I'll throw it into the fire. Throw it into the fire. It's great kindling for the fire. So it's still rotten. So Mar says, mibituna, it's moist. So the tevin here is moist, thorny, rotten tevin, and that's why it's mevutah. But it says, wait a minute, chazil hesed gadol. Hesed gadol is when you have a large fire, even if it's moist, for instance, if when you start a fire, a small fire, you always have to put in dry wood or kindling because the fire won't start. Once the fire is much greater, you can even put in wood that is somewhat moist because the fire can overcome that moisture. So it's over here. You could use this tevin once the fire is big. So it says, hesed gadol lo shchiach. That's an unusual circumstance. We're not going to worry about this item still being chazi and really the kabel tumah because it can be used in a hesed gadol. It's just too far-fetched. right? If it's not, as if it's not far-fetched that it's a rotten, thorny, right, moist tevin. But all right, that will be classified as a chatzitza over here because it's no longer roi. Where it says gugurus. How are you going to explain the right pressed figs, the dried figs over here? Chazulei. Right, that's a. They're also chazis. Amar Shmuel b'shit rifu. They became wormy, and they rotted, and they became wormy. So therefore, they are no longer usable. So the basic premise of the Gemara over here is v'chein tani rabbi ravua shit rifu. Right, that they were rotten. So the basic premise of the Gemara here is that something can only function as a chatzitza if you're going to be vatel, if you're going to leave it there. If you're going to leave it there, then it can function as a chatzitza. What determines if it's going to be functional or not is ichze, whether you can use it or not. And whether you can use it is also going to be the same, as Shaul said before, the same determination, whether it's mekabel tumah or not. So if you're not going to use it, it's not ra'oi for your usage, then it's also probably also not, but functional. If it's not functional, it's also not mekabel tumah, and therefore it'll be a chatzitza. So now Gemara says, wait a minute. In this case of the brisa that the Mishnah we just brought, hay chavit hechidami. What's the case of the barrel that is holding the items inside of it? Either puma labar, which way is it facing? In the barrel that's holding these figs, which is it facing outward, right? Higufati chavit. Then it itself should be the chatzitza. I mean, outwards means into the house that does not have the mate. If it's facing out to the side that doesn't have a mate, daha kli cheres enu metamei megabo. We know that the din of a kli cheres is that a kli cheres may only get tuma from its internal side, not from its external side. So if the external side of the kli cheres is now facing the house with the mate in it, then that should be a great chatzitza. What are we worried about? The grugurus that are inside or the tevin that's inside, right? The chavit itself should be sufficient as a blocker for the tuma. Ella de puma lagav. So it must be that the mouth is facing inward, right? That's the other option. That's why we have to worry about the grugurus, because the mouth faces inward. If the mouth faces inwards, then it is mekabel tuma. And a kli that is becomes tamei is no longer a good chatzitza. V'ibaytema lo'olam depuma labar, that the mouth is facing the house without the mate in it. Hachumai skinim v'matechet. Right, that we're talking about a chavit shel matechet made out of metal. Metal is mekabel tuma both from the inside and the outside. So it'll be irrelevant, right, whether it's which way it's facing, because it itself will become tamei. If it itself becomes tamei, then it will be, right, it will not be a chatzitza, a good chatzitza. And therefore we must then worry about what is the issue with the gugurus or the tevin inside. Are they the chatzitza? Now why do we have to do this? Why is the Gemara demand that one look at the gugurus and the tevin separate from the basket and the chavit and the barrel or the pitcher? Why do we make them look separately? So the Tosu says that don't think that the reason is because in the end you're going to take away the chavit or the kupa. That you might leave the figs and the tevin there, but you're going to take away the item that's holding them. Don't say that. That's not the reason why over here. But the din is that anything that is chutzeitz has a requirement that it could stand on its own. That's just, it's a din in chatzitza. The din of chatzitza is that it may not be held up by another item. It must be able to stand on its own feet, on its own 2 feet. Right? If it stands on its own 2 feet, it can be a chatzitza. If it cannot stand on its own 2 feet, it cannot be a chatzitza. So in order to determine whether these grogurus here or this tevin is a good chatzitza, it must be able to stand without the basket or without the barrel. And that's the definition of what a chatzitza is. It's something that can stand on its own and can be placed here and left here, and that will function as a chatzitza. The other thing that Tosus mentions is the Gemara. Everybody learns Shabbos in the end of Shabbos. Now, the famous Gemara in the end of Shabbos is that they have, the last Mishnah talks about exactly like this. They had a case where on Shabbos, they had a window that was tefach by a tefach, and they plugged the hole with a kli cheres. So when they plugged the hole with a kli cheres, right, it sounds like over there that the kli cheres can function as a, right, a chatzitza, even if you were not mevatel it to the binyan, right? There the Gemara says it's okay to do that on Shabbos, and it's not classified as binyan. But yet our Gemara seems to suggest that the only way the kli cheres, or the items here, function as chatzitzot is if you mevatel them to the binyan, that you actually do binyan. So why? How can you allow this on Shabbos and say it's not binyan? And over here, the Gemara says, no good unless you do it as a binyan. So Tosus is mechalik between how it's functioning as a chatzitza. If it fills the entire hole, meaning, for instance, like the kli cheres on Shabbos, in the case of the Gemara on Shabbos, and the Gemara on Shabbos, where they put in a full kli cheres into and it filled the whole tefach by tefach space, then you do not need to mevatel it. Because it's now eliminated the window entirely. Or it's eliminated the opening entirely. If it eliminates the window or the opening entirely, then there's no need for bittul in order to have it be part of the binyan. The simple fact that there is no longer an opening here is sufficient, right, to say that the tumah will not move. On the other hand, if it only covers portions of the window, like our case is here, where then you need it to be mevutal. You need it to be a part of the binyan in order for it to then diminish the window that still exists. Because the window is still there, you just have now somehow diminished the window. Now, what we want to know is that diminishment, right, a permanent part of the window or the binyan, or is that something temporary? If it's temporary, then you really haven't done anything. The window's there, and you just have something in the window. Right?
So there's no opening at all in the story.
Right, exactly.
If it's opening that may or may not be small enough to prevent the back door, then we have to determine, okay, what's really considered part of the opening and what's considered part of the...
Right, very good, exactly.
You've got a physical chatzitza, you don't need a halachic one.
Right, very good. Those are all good ways to define it. All right, then we'll stop over here.